With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Jones! Bowden!
He's got it! England have won the World Cup by the barest of margins!
Stokes flashes it away through the covers for four, and England have won the match!
Hello, welcome to the Analyst Insight Cricket. What a joyous message we have for you as well. England, in the space of 9 days of actual cricket, have won two test matches in Pakistan, something that they've only managed in the previous 60 years. Two test wins in Pakistan in 60 years, two test wins in the space of 9 days of cricket on this tour to give them the series. An amazing fourth day in Multan, which actually was in the balance for quite a while, with Pakistan actually having a great chance of victory. But England, in the end, just seemed to have all the answers, Simon.
Well, they did, thanks to Mark Wood, ultimately. Pakistan needed 65 to win. They had five wickets left. A partnership was building, and then Wood managed to dismiss the adhesive Mohammad Nawaz in one over. And then in the next over, he got rid of Shakil as well. He batted so well. He was so gritty, and he deserved 100, really. He played magnificently for his side. Under pressure, he just absorbed it all, and it looked as if he was going to take Pakistan home to victory at one point. But Wood changed the course of the day's play, and we can talk about the dismissal of Shakil a little bit later. Perhaps we should talk about the achievement, really, for England to come here and win two test matches in, well, as you say, 9 days, two in a fortnight. What was it, two in 60 years, then two in a fortnight? It's a remarkable achievement and a remarkable transformation by England this year. They were going nowhere in the Caribbean. I mean, they lost to West Indies, who've just been thrashed twice by Australia, and they have turned it round. And this is the part of the culmination of that. And it's been fascinating to watch it. And I think, you know, Pakistan and the crowds that have turned up, they've thoroughly enjoyed the series that they've seen as well, the Pakistan supporters, although ultimately disappointed. Seems a strange thing to say when you're 2-0 down. But it has been a riveting series so far, with both results in the balance until very near the end of the game.
I think what's been interesting, and you mentioned Mark Wood there, is the impact that the England faster bowlers have had. Because you go to a place like Pakistan, or indeed India, and you expect the spinners to have, you know, a fairly big influence. And actually, it's been the faster bowlers. It's amazing, actually, if you look at the series averages so far in England's camp, and the faster bowlers, Mark Wood just played the one test, six wickets at an average of 17, four in this second innings, four for 65. Ollie Robinson, eight wickets at 18. And Jimmy Anderson, eight wickets at 18 as well. So not only unexpected prosperity for the England fast bowlers, but very low averages as well. And I don't know if that says a little bit about the Pakistan batting, especially the lower order batting. But they haven't had much to work with on the pitches, not in terms of sort of traditional elements to be able to get swing and seam as you would in England. But they've just, I think, two things to say about it. One is they've exploited the conditions that they've found very cleverly. And secondly, Stokes has used them very cleverly, very intelligently. He just recognises when are the moments to use those particular bowlers, like, for instance, Mark Wood just before lunch today, to get those two key wickets with Pakistan actually on top, in fact. And I think actually that just says something about Stokes, not only his cricketing inclinations and his cricketing knowledge, but actually the fact that he is a bowler. And I've always thought with captaincy in cricket that it's good to have a captain who understands bowlers and understands bowling and can just identify those key moments. Of course, we talked about the importance, perhaps England's deficiencies in the bowling department for taking the 20 wickets in Pakistan, but they've defied our reservations and taken those 20 wickets. And it's just, it's how they've bowled and how Stokes has used them. And by the way, Jack Leach, the leading spinner, he's taking his wickets at 57. So it hasn't been spin that has done the trick for England. It's been seam.
Yeah, and today, or this innings, Pakistan's second innings, pace bowlers 8 for 132. And the spinners, they didn't go around the park, but Pakistan mastered them quite comfortably. Last test match in the second innings, 9 wickets in the second innings. I don't think necessarily that England's pace bowlers expected to have a bigger swag of wickets as they have taken in this series. I think, you know, they, especially in the last test match, I think, you know, people afterwards saying, I've never seen a flatter pitch than this. You know, it's such hard work. And I spoke to Mark Wood afterwards. I don't think I've ever seen an athlete in any of the sports I've ever covered so tired afterwards. He just said, I am so tired. You know, Woody, he's sort of quite a joker and he's quite a bullion. He just looked absolutely drained, and he sort of dragged up his sort of enthusiasm to do the interview for the BBC. He was just so tired. And I noticed soon afterwards he did an impromptu press conference for the written media, and he sat down. You don't see that happen very often. He was just so tired, but he managed to drag England back into the game and ultimately help them win the game today. I know in the last test match, Ollie Robinson was named player of the match for his wickets in the second innings. I just wonder whether Wood would have been named player of the match for his performance today, because, you know, without him, I don't know. I'm not sure England would have won the game. Unconventional wickets, in a sense, both caught down the leg side. But I think for Wood, and, you know, in these conditions, they are legitimate dismissals. You know, you're bowling into the ribs of the batter. And it's quick, and you're playing a flinching stroke, and it's so easy, or certainly possible, to catch the glove or whatever the fine edge of the bat. So it's not so much of a strangle as you often feel it can be when players are caught down the leg side.
I've always thought actually that bowling for those sorts of wickets caught down the leg side is totally legitimate. It's just as valid as getting the outside edge, is getting a bottom edge or a glove down the leg side, especially in these conditions, in these parts of the world. Because actually, if you look at the T20 series that they played in October, November, when Wood was quite a tormentor of the Pakistani batting there, and he bowled a lot of short balls and got Babar Azam out a couple of times, for instance, caught pulling and hooking. And that is because of the different heights that the ball comes off at on these pitches, it does make the shot difficult to play. And in a way, they have to take it on, because if he's bowling a lot of short balls, you've got to score somehow. So it's genuinely a taxing issue for the batsman to try and read the ball and the height of it and try and keep it down or place it away from the fielders. That's a challenge in itself. They have to keep the score going. You can't just allow bouncer after bouncer or short ball after short ball to go past harmlessly, because you lose the momentum of the game. You lose your partnership building up a potential winning opportunity. So I can quite see why the players, those batsmen, played those shots. And because of the slightly different heights of bounce and the speed of the ball coming through as well, that's when the wicket-taking opportunities occur. Two good catches by Ollie Pope, one of them obviously contested, I thought it was genuine in the end. I mean, you can look at these for endless times and come up with a suspicion that it might have touched the ground, but I don't know. Sometimes actually looking at it in full speed gives you the best impression, and the more you look at it in slow motion, the more confused you become. I thought that takedown the leg side was actually a very good catch, and it just shows the value also of having a fast bowler, somebody who can bowl above 90 miles an hour, to ram home your opportunity or initiative in these sorts of conditions. Somehow England did it in the last match, but it was only because of the speed of their scoring, giving the bowlers time to take the wickets. This time it was a closer game in some ways, wasn't it? A much closer game. And I think Wood was the difference.
Yeah, absolutely. And they were desperate to get him in the side, you know, that extra pace. I think, you know, there's a sense of frustration after Rawalpindi. Well that they bowled there, that they didn't have any firepower to knock out the tail. You know, it was quite easy to stay in. I mean, in a way, Pakistan should not have lost that game. They should have been able to block out on that pitch if they wanted to, but they couldn't quite manage it. And so England wanted that extra firepower, and Wood provided it, and he summoned up all those sort of reserves of energy. I mean, he hasn't played that much, and he steamed in, and he bowled really well. He bowled, you know, quick and straight during this game. And, you know, he got his rewards, 4 for 65 today. On the catch, I spoke to Ollie Pope afterwards, and his view on it was, well, I dived over, I did the best I could, and then it was up to others to say whether it was out or not. You know, that was his view. He said, I didn't know, I just went for it, I came up with it. I mean, Mark Wood was charging down, appealing and celebrating, and so were the other England close fielders. Harry Brooks said, you know, it was out from his position at short leg. I suppose you could say, well, they would, wouldn't they? And Ben Duckett apparently said to Ollie Pope, yeah, you've caught that. Pope wasn't sure. He didn't appeal. And so that was one of the things that sort of cast doubt on it. I mean, Yoz, you've been in that TV truck, you know, on these low catches. Perhaps just explain why sometimes, I mean, I have to say, I don't know whether it was out or not. And I think Joel Wilson had a really difficult job. I thought in fast motion it definitely was, but you're right. In slow motion, that, you know, there must have been a bit of doubt. Joel Wilson thought not. He said, I think he's got his gloves underneath it and taken the catch cleanly. But just explain why, you know, when you're in that TV truck, you know, what the pictures look like and how perhaps sometimes they can be a bit deceiving to the viewers.
Well, I think what you need, I think you need a 3D impression to really get the right verdict on this. Because TV pictures are in two dimensions, you often find that the ball looks as if it's touching the ground when it isn't. And in fact, we did experiments on telly where a fielder or, you know, one of the commentary team would hold the ball on the ground with our hand underneath it, and we'd then use the TV coverage cameras to film what we were doing, taking a catch and making sure that the ball was cleanly in the hand and the hand was touching the ground but the ball wasn't. And from certain angles, certain cameras high up in the stand, often the cameras are positioned on sort of second and third tier, so they're looking down. So you know what you really need is to be able to look up from a below at, you know, almost at ground level. But not many cameras are at ground level. So from higher up, it looks as if the ball is touching the ground because of the two-dimensional image, when actually it isn't. And what you really need is either a camera. You know, you need grass cam, really, don't you? To a blade cam or something to be able to tell really, truly and clearly whether the ball has touched the ground. I think also, you know, sometimes, and we've seen even in this series, sometimes fielders grab the ball and they think it's carried, but then the pictures from a particular angle show, and sometimes the run-out cameras are quite good because they are low cameras and they're now HD as well, so you do get a clear image from them. So sometimes they can show that the ball touched the ground, even though the fielder didn't think it did. Those wicketkeeper ones are also difficult because of the gloves, the wicketkeeper's gloves, that sort of rather cloud the clarity of the picture. And also the wicketkeeper, because he's got the gloves on, isn't necessarily sure himself. You know, as a fielder, you can sometimes tell because your fingers, you know, touch the grass, whether you just got the ball underneath, whether you've got your hand underneath or not. But with a wicketkeeper, it's much harder to tell. So, you know, these things are very difficult. And in the end, you just have to say, well, how much doubt was there? How much doubt? If there's sort of 20% doubt that it carried, then you have to give it not out. But in the case of this catch from Pope, I thought there was a sort of 2% doubt and therefore give it out.
Yeah, I mean, lots of people have different views on this. I just having a look around social media and speaking to other people in our media circle. Waka Yunus said it. You know, he thought it wasn't out. He thought it was. You know, clearly the ball was on the ground. I saw Michael Vaughan suggest it was on the ground as well, or at least it brushed the ground. And others seemed pretty happy with that. I think David Gower said, David said, look in the newspaper tomorrow, and it said it was out. But he said he defended the catch. Vic Marks, with us on Test Match Special, he thought that the fast motion view of it showed that Pope got his gloves underneath and took it cleanly. We'll never know. But it was such a key moment in the day. Shaquille played so well. He didn't look particularly disgruntled when he was sent on his way. But what a moment for him. He battled so hard. 94 from 213 balls. He looked as if he wanted to bat for the rest of the available time in the Test match, you know, for a full 5 days. England did not really look like getting him out. It was his first full shot, if you like. But I suppose that's what extra pace does, the extra pace of Mark Wood. I don't know, does it slightly, taint England's victory? Not taint, that's not quite the right word, but it sort of makes it a bit unsatisfying because of the element of doubt around it, although not that I think the England players felt there was any doubt there. They thought, yeah, that catch was taken cleanly.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Of course, looking at the beginning of the day's play, the key man, briefly, was Joe Root. I love the way that Ben Stokes invests so much faith in his bowling. You know, brings him on at key times. I suppose that says a little bit about Will Jacks's inexperience at the moment. Again, he's a work in progress, even though he got those 6 wickets in the first test. They were slightly lucky, I suppose. But there's some potential there, undoubtedly. But Root is a bit more reliable. And now, with that wicket of Fahim Ashraf, he's the third player in the history of the game to score 10,000 test runs and take 50 wickets. The other two being, Simon?
One of them was Jack Callis. Yeah,
correct.
And the
other one was Steve Waugh, yeah. And who was a decent bowler actually. Steve Waugh, he bowled a mean bouncer actually. Apart from also swinging the ball around and being quite keen as a sort of sixth bowler used often, and sometimes even fifth bowler. In fact, I think early in his Test career he was almost more of a bowler. He came in at number 7, and bowled quite a lot of overs. Anyway, a fantastic achievement by Joe Root, just illustrating the fact that you forget that he's got 10,000 test runs, of course, in such a young age, only 31. So the world is his oyster as far as batting is concerned. But he's got that extra ingredient of his bowling. And I think, I suppose, if you had to say anything about players of the future and Harry Brook being one, if they can have a second ingredient to their game, it just makes them so much more valuable. If Harry Brook could bowl, I'm not saying he needs to because he's just such a fantastic player, a batsman, but if he could bowl as well, it just gives the captains just that extra option.
Yeah, Root was key today at the start because Pakistan had two left-handers out there. And Jack Leach was struggling a bit. I mean, you generally speaking, you want, of course you do, you want the slow left-armer to bowl to the right-handers and you want the off-break bowler to bowl to the left-handers. So it kind of worked. And actually, Root, he did create pressure because one thing England were doing today, they were trying to get through to the new ball. And they had 16 overs to get through. And so what they needed early on was, a wicket if possible, but also to keep it tight. And Root was able to do that. And so that sort of guided England to where they thought they needed to be. But of course, then that partnership developed between Shakil and Nawaz. It really held them up and made it look as though Pakistan were going to win the game. So Root in the sixth over of the day got rid of Fahim Ashraf. He nicked one to slip and Zach Crawley took the catch. Yeah, 50 wickets for Joe Root. And he took that fifer in India, 5 for 8, incredible figures on that raging turner, and ended up watching England being bowled out and lose the game that day. So it ultimately, not much to celebrate. Do you think he can get 100 wickets?
Yeah, why not? Yeah, absolutely. I think he can. And in a way, it's the paucity of other options, spin options, gives him even more chance, actually. It may not happen so immediately. Obviously, he's got a series in New Zealand where he probably won't bowl all that much. And then the Aussies in the summer, interesting. But yeah, I suppose the main thing is whether his back stands up to it, because he has got a sort of long-standing back injuries or back ailments, never help bowling. But I think he bowls his leg breaks. He can bowl a bouncer. And he's such a kind of multi-purpose bowler. He loves bowling round the wicket to right-handers and left-handers, which a lot of off-spinners are not very comfortable doing. So absolutely, definitely can get 100 wickets. He'll be the second person in history to have done that, because I don't think Steve Waugh took 100 wickets, but Jack Callis certainly did.
Yeah, well, Jack Callis, fantastic all-rounder. I mean, his numbers are amazing, aren't they? One thing about Root, of course, in this Test series so far, he's not made 100, and he's one of the few in the top order not to make 100. Crawley's made one, Duckett's made one, Pope's made one, Brooks made two, and Joe Root has missed out, and he was undone by Abrar in this Test match. I want to talk about Abrar in just a moment, but before we get on to Abrar, one thing I would say is it was a really tight day's play. It was a really exciting Test match, and England winning the game by 26 runs. It was so exciting. It drew an enormous amount of attention. But should they have allowed themselves to get in this position? Because they were absolutely dominating this game before lunch on the third day. And it was just a question of how many they wanted to score. They were scoring runs so easily. And then they lost their last 5 wickets for 19 runs. What I thought was the pitch was flattening out, and I thought they didn't quite sense the danger of the situation. They got a bit cavalier, played lots of shots, players caught on the boundary. And I wonder whether they could have been a bit more ruthless and really nailed the game down. Ultimately, the fact they set Pakistan 355 to win made it an exciting game. But do you want to, I don't know, it's this balance, isn't it, between winning and also entertaining? But I've come back to this point, they have entertained enough. They've entertained so much in this series, and there was some pragmatic cricket from England. So I just wonder whether they could have been a bit more pragmatic and played some shots, big shots, when they got a 400 lead or whatever. Just 30 or 40 more would have absolutely killed the game. Pakistan was saying in the lead up to the third day, we think we can chase 320, 330. We got 350 recently against Sri Lanka, although it was only actually about 342 to be precise. So I just wonder whether they could have been a bit more ruthless. And I wonder whether, I wonder whether they even discuss it, actually. Ben Stokes, he sort of sidestepped it when I spoke to him afterwards. But I just wonder whether, can you be a bit more ruthless and nail down the game? Because actually it probably got a bit too close for comfort.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things that Stokes will think privately and will probably talk to the team about at an appropriate time, but probably won't talk about publicly because it will seem a bit disloyal. But I totally agree with you. And actually, I point the finger at somebody like Ollie Robinson a little bit, which may be harsh. And by the way, looking up the Test match averages of bowlers in history, he's got the second best Test average, wicket-taking average, of any bowler of the last 50 or 60 years. I think Frank Tyson is marginally ahead of him, but all the other bowlers that are ahead of him in terms of average, have a lower average per wicket, are all players who played 60 years or more ago, except Kyle Jameson from New Zealand, the very tall fast bowler from New Zealand, whose average is marginally better than Robinson. But Robinson has the second best test average for a bowler for the last 60 years. It's 19.61 at this point. Amazing. And he's taken 59 wickets. So the qualification is 50 wickets plus, if you like. But his batting average in test cricket is 10. And that, I'm afraid, is woeful. And often he gets out, as he did in this match, just having a huge hack across the line when he's hardly got himself in. So I think England's gung-ho approach to batting has kind of leaked into the tail enders, and they sort of think they can do it too. And, you know, sometimes they can. But and Mark Wood played pretty well in the first innings of this test and got 30-odd not out. But I think there just needs to be a bit of common sense in that lower order as well. Just as it's almost like they think they can play the shots that Ollie Pope and Joe Root and Harry Brook can play. Well, I'm afraid they can't. They're just not as good. They need to take more time. And Robinson batting at 8, as he has in, you know, a few test matches, has got to apply himself a bit more.
Yeah, one thing I would say about that is, yeah, it was a poor shot from Ollie Robinson, but you know, in a way, Ben Stokes had shown the way, because he took on a shot with a huge amount of difficulty out towards deep mid-wicket. There were three fielders on the leg side boundary, and it was a huge boundary out there. So he'd sort of gone for it. What I presume was that, OK, England have this very attacking approach. They thought they had enough. But I just wonder whether they could have been just a bit more street smart, because he thought, yeah, they get bowled out here, 350. It's not impossible to get these on this pitch. This pitch has quietened down. It seemed to have a bit more in it earlier in the game, and it really had gone flat. And I think it's just about, I suppose, a little bit. Occasionally, you've got to play a bit more traditional test cricket, because you've got to be ruthless. You get in a winning position, you absolutely nail it down. And I think the point is, it's not as if they hadn't done that the day before. Stokes had come in and played actually quite pragmatically. You know, he talks about this aggressive way of playing, but he had his old sort of old style test match head on in the day before. So, you know, they are perfectly capable of doing it. It's almost as if they didn't quite see the danger and got a bit carried away. And actually, just on Harry Brook, he said, he said to me afterwards, I played a poor shot in the first innings. He tried to larrup it over the top, and he recalculated in the second innings and played magnificently. It was a fine innings. He didn't look in too much trouble. I suppose, in the end, his calculation was, OK, we haven't got many wickets left here. There were 2 wickets left, and he went for a big shot, and he was caught on the boundary as well. But I just wonder where they could have said to themselves, you know, 20, 30 more here, and we're safe in this game. You know, get to 400. Anyway, their cavalier approach, 5 for 19, created a dramatic and very exciting what proved to be final day, fourth day of the match, game finishing a day early. That would be the one thing I would say, that there might be times in the future, e.g. Ashes series, where you don't want to open the door in any way whatsoever to Australia if they get in a winning position. Does that seem harsh or not?
No, I think it's fair. I mean, I know Stokes' response will be, we just want to get as many runs as possible, almost as quickly as possible. And look, if it doesn't happen one or two times, and you know, we get bowled out, that's so be it, really. It's a bit like Owen Morgan's attitude during the first couple of years of his reign as the one-day captain. And he talked about shooting the lights out, attempting to shoot the lights out, and we'll try and, you know, see how far we can go, kind of thing, how far we can take this. And for the first couple of years, it was, no, I don't care if we got bowled out for 180 in 32 overs. You know, that we want to play that way. But in tournament cricket, they gradually learnt how to apply a level of smartness to how they were going to approach a particular game, so that they were able to win that 2019 World Cup. And I guess, you know, what Stokes is doing at the moment is there's this sort of, it's almost a culture of exploration to see how far they can to take this team, and maybe the Ashes is the ultimate target. And I know that it's always tempting to take the Ashes as a special series, and kind of, you know, it's always the benchmark for how a team is performing, how an England team is performing. And that's sometimes a little bit of an illusion, because there are other teams out there who are probably even better, like India, for instance, and playing in India is the ultimate challenge, winning in India sort of thing. But it's very easy to focus on the Ashes every 4 years at home. And so I think that over the next, you know, couple of months, when they play in New Zealand, they'll probably still seek this level of high expression, of high octane cricket, and then kind of factor it all in together and learn the lessons that those games have thrown up, and apply it all to a very serious Ashes campaign, and obviously looking ahead to future series. So, you know, I suppose that's a long, very long-winded way of saying I think you're right, but I don't think that yet they will change their tack.
Yeah, well, we'll see. Actually, Ben Stokes afterwards today said that the only time that they really thought that they might lose the game was when Abrar came out after lunch and started smacking it. Because he said, you know, someone new to Test match cricket, you know, you don't have those inhibitions. You think, this is going to be typical. You know, it's all new to him. He's got that freedom to play. He's got his bag of swag in the match, and you know, all those wickets he's taken. And he suddenly thought, yeah, he could take this away from us suddenly. And I mean, fortunately for England, he kept on going and smacked one straight to extra cover off Jimmy Anderson. And then I think when he was out, I think finally thought, yeah, England are going to win this match. It's just a bit too many for the last two wickets to get another 45. Well, they had a go at it. They had this. The field back for Salman Agha. They were just, you know, phony war, four balls the over, then bring the field up and then see what Salman could do off the last two. And he was hitting boundaries. And then you hope to bowl at the number 11 at the other end, Muhammad Ali. And eventually got a full over at Muhammad Ali, and Robinson dismissed him first ball inside edge onto the pad, ballooned up, and Pope took the catch. So yeah, a great game for him. If he'd been on the winning side, he probably would have been player of the match. What do England do now, Yoz? Do you think they're 2-0 up in the series? You know, they've won the series. A fantastic achievement to win two Test matches in Pakistan for the first time ever. An England team's ever done that, two matches in a series. Do you think they do mix and match a bit now? Does folks come back? Do they give Rian Ahmed a game? They blood him here and say, I don't know, perhaps in place of Will Jacks, bring in folks for one of the bowlers. What do you think?
Firstly, I think they need to rejoice and celebrate what they've achieved. And often in the kind of life of a professional sportsman, there isn't enough time to do that. And there isn't much time here, obviously. And you're in a country where presumably alcohol isn't easy to get hold of either. So they'll have to kind of change the way they celebrate a little bit. But I think they should really absorb what they've achieved, which is momentous. And I also think that what I like about Stokes's approach, as well as the on-field stuff, is I think they've thrown away the necessity to have to practice to the nth degree. This is something that Stokes himself has got over time, partly from Trevor Bayliss, I think. I remember Stokes actually saying that when Bayliss took over, one of the first things he said to him after about a year anyway was, don't give everything in practice. Leave a little bit for the match. You know, only go at, I don't know, 60, 70% in practice and leave something for the actual game. And I think that's something Stokes has tried to bring into this team, is you don't need to flog yourself in practice. Do the necessary, do the basics. But there's a sort of flexibility to how they prepare, because you want to save that energy, that mental and physical energy, that desire for the game itself. And so the second thing England mustn't do is go into the nets, and I'm sure they won't, you know, unnecessarily before the Karachi Test match. They've got an extra day off now. I hope they use it to, if possible, look around a bit. I don't know if they're allowed to go out much, but it's they've had such an amazing impact as a team, not just by what they've achieved results wise, but how they've played. And I think you just sense from the Pakistani crowd that they really appreciated that, and that's why, you know, they've come out in sort of quite big numbers, certainly in the first test, and they probably will in Karachi. As far as what England do team wise, I mean, Jax to me is not a test cricketer at the moment, and I would be tempted to try Rian Ahmed as one change, but that temptation should also be kind of measured against the importance of winning the third test. Pakistan will come back strongly. They'll want to finish the series on a high. It's always tempting to, you know, like with the end of Ashes series, you know, or end of any five test series, throwing in players, spinners you haven't seen before to see how they go, and often those experiments are rather unproductive. So it's a question of whether they see him as someone who's going to have an impact in the game. That's what Stokes looks at and McCullum looks at. Will this player have an impact at some point in the game? And if they think yes, they can see the potential to have more of an impact than, say, Will Jax, then maybe they'll throw him in. What do you think?
Well, I'd be interested to see what they come up with. I mean, there might be a temptation to play. I do sense that they're a very physically tired team. I think today was a relief for them. You know, I think there was the euphoria after Rawalpindi. I think they realised they'd done something special, and it was a great test match and a great test win. To get 20 wickets on that pitch, flattest pitch I've ever seen, I think flattest pitch they've ever seen as well. So I think there was a real high after Rawalpindi, and this was a really big physical effort to get through this game, and it was such a tight finish. And I think there's some sickness in the camp as well, some general illness, so that's, you know, that's a factor as well. So I think it may well be that they have a look at it, and they might try to freshen things up. There's Jamie Overton that could come into the side as well. Jimmy Anderson, will Jimmy Anderson play? There was talk that he had a bit of a hand injury, that he did fielding. But, you know, he was out there giving it all today. Mark Wood absolutely shattered after his exploits over the last few days. And Ollie Robinson's put in everything as well and bowled magnificently. So, yeah, there might be just a look at freshening up, making a few changes. I wouldn't be surprised, put it that way. I mean, the one thing is, how do they fit their options in, get enough options, and play Ben Folkes as well? And, you know, they've gone must needs with Ollie Pope keeping wicket out here. And, you know, generally speaking, he's kept well. He took that vital catch today that was given out, and he hasn't let them down in this game. I could see Rian Ahmed playing. And also, you know, it'd be fascinating, wouldn't it, to see him play three first-class matches. It might be asking a bit much of him. It may be that they do just see him as a tour to learn on, just for them to have a look at him and for him to have a look at them and see how things are done. One thing I would say about Rian Ahmed as well, just looking at his numbers, is that he can bat as well. So it's not like they're bringing in someone who is just there for his bowling. He can bat. He's already got a first class 100. So there's that. You know, so he could come in for Will Jax. That might be an option. And, you know, the pitches out here are pretty good, aren't they, for batting? You say to the top six, well, you know, it's your job to get the runs. 2-0 up is a great position to be in, and you know you can if you want experiment a bit. I think that's, they've earned that right to have a look at one or two players. It may, you know, maybe having a look at a couple is not such a bad thing, because you know, freshening teams up can improve them. It doesn't have to weaken them.
How have Pakistan reacted to what's happened? What do you sense from the crowd and from co-commentators and so on?
That's a good question and a difficult one to answer. I think that they probably were taken a little bit by surprise by what England came up with in Rawalpindi. The way that, you know, I think this is the feeling that perhaps that you can't keep on playing this way in certain conditions against certain teams, and England showed in Rawalpindi that they could. And, you know, that to concede 500 runs in a day and that on the first day of the series, and that is some marker that you put down, and, you know, to go and win that game as well. And I have to say I was impressed with Pakistan in the second innings. I mean, they were rolled over in the first innings. It was pretty feeble from them, but they fought right to the end today, and it was nip and tuck. Albeit that I think they were let back into the game a bit by England's carelessness at the back end of their second innings. I don't think it's the greatest Pakistan side ever. I think their bowling is a bit thin. They are missing Shaheen Shah Afridi, which is a huge blow to them. And at times, it was Abrar against England in this test match with the bowling. And without him, goodness knows where they would have been. I think they'd have been beaten very heavily. But he's given them a bit of cause for optimism. Yeah, I'm sure England will have a look, have a look at what he does and work out his mystery. And have a look at the videos, do their research, and then perhaps make it a bit harder for him in Karachi. But Pakistan are a bit of a crossroads with their team at the moment. But Shakil, excellent. Just come into the side. He looks really solid. Barber's got runs in the series, but not the destructive runs, the massive scores that could change the course of it. And the top two, Shafiq and Imam. They're a solid opening partnership. So it's not without optimism for Pakistan, but their bowling looks thin, but perhaps a lot of bowling sides look thin against this England batting side. When it really tries to take you down,
It's a cavalry charge, isn't it? God, and Harry Brook, man of the match for another 100. The sky's the limit for him, I think. Just the way he handles the situation, seems to understand what's required, and obviously no holding him back in terms of his aggressive approach. Seems to have just such a range of stroke, but yet he loves batting. He's not going to just give it away willy-nilly. He loves being out there in the middle, and clearly has an insatiable appetite for run making, so that bodes well for him. So what about travel-wise? You head to Karachi now, and this time it's by plane, so you're not going to see quite the same colourful array as you travel south?
No, we have two options, Yoz. One is to fly from Multan to Karachi. The other one is to go on the overnight bus, which is taking all our luggage from Multan to Karachi. So it depends whether you like flying or not. I'm not great fan of flying, full stop. So it did cross my mind to take the overnight bus, but I don't know. It's a long, long way from here to Karachi. I think it's about 14 hours. I feel a bit sorry for the driver. Our bags have just been loaded up onto the bus, and they're heading off fairly shortly. So they won't have the scenic route, the bags, because it'll be nighttime most of the way. So that's what we're doing. We're going a day early to Karachi. And one reason a little bit is you feel a bit trapped in your hotel here because the security is so tight in this city. They don't want any mishaps at all. So you can't just wander out. Whereas perhaps in Karachi, there might be a bit more opportunity to have a look round and get out of the hotel. So, into the last match, the last sort of week of the tour. It's been a momentous tour for England to come here and win. And perhaps, over the next couple of days, it will seep in. I said to you a little bit earlier, there was just a sense of sort of relief almost, rather than euphoria at winning this test match, because of the hard work and the mental reserves and physical reserves that were called upon to win the game. But another great test match. England have played plenty of them this year. Long may it continue. Perhaps we'll have another ripper in Karachi, and we might have a few new faces as well.
Well, we'll speak to you in Karachi. Meanwhile, as I said the other day on this podcast, I created a new Twitter handle, The Analyst Pod, and I'll post on it today a little clip of Harry Brook's enterprise and skill, especially looking at his ability against the short ball. When I said the other day that he's incredibly fast on the slightly shorter ball from the spinners and capitalise on it very quickly, and that forces them to then pitch it up, and that plays into his hands. So a little bit of analysis of Harry Brook on the Analyst Pod Twitter handle. And please post your thoughts about what England have achieved so far, or anything else that happens to crop up in your mind, something we can talk about over the next few days. Some questions or some comments, we'd love to see them. And also, if you enjoy this podcast, please give us a review on iTunes as well. Simon, thank you for your thoughts and surviving the various ailments that are knocking around the hotel and the team at the moment. You don't sound quite 100%, but I know you'll give 100%. And we'll be back speaking to you, hopefully, good journeys permitting, on Saturday after the first day's play from Karachi.
Great. I'll speak to you then. Thanks very much for listening. Goodbye for now.
Podcast Network.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.